So far in our sermon series, we've looked at Leviticus chapter 1, which described the burnt offering, which prefigured Christ's death to pay the price for our sins. And the key word there with the burnt offering was accepted. Through Christ, we're accepted by God. Then in Leviticus 2, we looked at the grain offerings and a subcategory of those, the fruit, first fruit offerings, which symbolized our response to this salvation by pledging fealty to God as the King of Kings. And it included offering our works back to Him. The key word there was the word remembrance for the memorial keyword for the grain offering in Leviticus 2. Remembering God and His relationship with us. Now we come to chapter 3, a third class, and I think the final overall class of sacrifices, which is the sacrifice of peace offerings. Just some general comments about the peace offering. First, it was an optional sacrifice. It could be offered, but only after the burnt offering and the grain offering were made. So if you're going to offer it, there first had to be a burnt offering, then a grain offering, and then you could bring a peace offering. Although the Passover could be considered a kind of peace offering because it involved a shared meal, eating the animal that was sacrificed. The only time we find an actual command to offer a peace offering is in Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23, 16 through 19 describe how to observe the Pentecost holiday, and it specifically mentions bring a peace offering after you've done the grain offering. Here the words describing this peace offering, in the two Hebrew words, zabach shalemim. Zabach is a sacrifice. It's related to the word for slaughter. And so it emphasizes the killing of an animal. An animal was killed to create peace. The word shalomim, you may be able to hear shalom in that. That's the Hebrew word for peace. That's why we call it peace offering. It's actually plural. Shalomim, in is a plural ending of pieces, which doesn't really communicate well in English. But peace in more than one sense, the entire round of blessings and powers by which the salvation and integrity of man and his relation to God is established and secured. Kyle and Dalich are a classic commentators on the Old Testament, and I like the way they explain that concept. Peace in more than one direction. Peace between me and God. Peace between God and me. So the peace is plural. It is called by lots of different names: the thank offering, the slain offering, the serving offering, the settlement sacrifice, the communion sacrifice, fellowship offering. It's different from the burnt offering. The peace offering only included burning up the fat and internal organs. It wasn't the whole animal. The rest of the animal was eaten as a meal. The priest would get the right leg and thigh, breast and right leg. And then he, together with any other priests in the temple, the person who offered the sacrifice, that person's family, and any guests and friends, even foreigners that he wanted to bring to the table, could eat together in the presence of the Lord. Another interesting thing about this sacrifice is that it could be male or female, unlike the burnt offering, which could only be male. in that sense, pointing to Jesus alone. This Jesus alone, the death of Jesus alone, is what makes us acceptable to God. This peace offering, I think, is more representative of us offering ourselves. And I think that is why it's said it could be male or female. Now, that's my opinion. The Bible doesn't say that expressly. But this is the only sacrifice where the person making the sacrifice gets a tangible benefit back. He gets a steak dinner. That's pretty cool. For this reason, Matthew Henry commented that this particular offering emphasized God as a benefactor to his creatures, the giver of all good things. As we read from Ephesians 2, we see that Christ is the fulfillment of this. He's the final sacrifice that brings our peace, peace from us to God and God toward us. And that's pictured in this human fellowship around a table. As we move into the New Testament application of these principles, we don't offer animal sacrifices anymore. But there are, as I've said before, God is the same God, and we are the same species of people. And so the principles that applied to how to worship God that were expressed through these animal sacrifices are still principles that operate today in our relationship with God, even though the worship ceremonies have changed because of Christ's fulfillment of the sacrifices. And just as the flesh of the peace offering was eaten as a fellowship meal, so we're commanded to eat the flesh of Jesus Christ, our peace, in communion, Lord's Supper. All right, one more point of introduction to the peace offering, which is not actually in this chapter. It's in chapter 7. If you look at chapter 7, verses 11 and following, you'll see that there are three different kinds of peace offerings. So let me briefly run through them, and then we'll start stepping through Leviticus 3. So Leviticus 7, starting verse 11, says, "This is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings which he shall offer to the Lord. If he offers it for thanksgiving, then he shall offer with the sacrifice of thanksgiving unleavened cakes mixed with oil." And is skipping on down. "But if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow or a voluntary offering or free will offering, it shall be eaten the same day that he offers his sacrifice." So I see three different kinds of peace offerings. There's the praise offering or thanks offering. Matthew Henry suggested that Psalm 116:12 is talking about this kind of peace offering. Sounds reasonable. Psalm 116:12, "What shall I render to the Lord for all of his benefits toward me? I will take the cup of salvation and I will call upon the name of the Lord, and I will pay my vows to the Lord in the presence of all his people." That sounds like a peace offering. Psalm 56 explicitly mentions the peace offering. Psalm 56, verse 12, "My vows to the Lord I will perform. I will render thank offerings to you, for you have delivered my soul from death." This is why I'm going to offer a thanks offering. "You've delivered me from death. I want to thank you for that. You've kept my feet from falling so that I may walk before God in the light of life." The second class of peace offerings in Leviticus 7 is a vow, a special vow offering. Again, going back to Kyle and Dalich's commentary, this sacrifice is offered as a thanksgiving for salvation that's already received, sometimes as a prayer for salvation in a time of misfortune. Matthew Henry, in his commentary, wrote, "If a man was in the pursuit or expectation of any mercy from God, he would back up his prayer for it with a peace offering. and probably put up the prayer when he laid his hand upon the head of the offering. Now, Christ is our peace offering. For through him alone it is that we can expect to obtain mercy and an answer of peace to our prayers. Some examples of this vow fulfillment form of peace offering might be when Jacob was running for his life from his brother Esau, stopped at Bethel, and he made a promise to God, if you bring me back home safe again, I will make you my God. And so years later, after the whole time up in Haran with Laban, he ends up coming back with a large family and many possessions, returns to Bethel. And Genesis 35 tells us that he built an altar and made a sacrifice there. It was a fulfillment of his vow. His vow, his prayer had been answered, and so he was going to fulfill his vow. Hannah, in the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 1, Hannah also made a vow that if God would give her a son, she had no children. She wanted desperately to have a son. She said, God, if you'll just give me a son, I will devote him to the ministry. God answered her prayer, so when she comes back with little Samuel to worship at the temple, she brings three bulls, at least one of which would have been a peace offering. The free will offering would be the third kind of peace offering that's listed in Leviticus 7. It's kind of an extra gift for any occasion as needed or as desired. Deuteronomy 16, verse 10, mentions that in connection with the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. It says, you shall keep the Feast of Weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a free will offering from your hand, which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. As the Lord is blessed, bring a free will offering. Kind of an extra special gift to God. Exodus 35 talks about the gifts that people gave to help build the temple. Kind of a one-time thing. They needed materials to build the temple, and they called those free will offerings. The cloth and the gold and wood that they donated to build the temple were called free will offerings in Exodus 35:29. Okay, now let's step back into Leviticus 3 after seeing that overview. what kind of animals could be sacrificed? A cow, a sheep, or a goat? Verse 1, if he's offering from the cattle, which would be the cows and bulls, then verse 6, we have a second iteration of the whole process. If he's offering for his sacrifice of peace offerings to Jehovah from the flock, that will be sheep. And then verse 12 repeats the whole process again. If his offering is a goat, he shall offer it to the face of the Lord. So we have kind of three sections in this chapter, and they're going over the same process, just with three different kinds of animals. I'm going to combine them together because they're all basically the same. The only difference in processing the animals had to do with just an anatomical difference in the sheep that were used there in the Middle East of that day. They had, and I meant to get a picture of this, but ran out of time. Maybe you've seen, I think they're called Nubians here. They've got this big old pouch of fat that hangs off their rump. And because fat is treated specially in this sacrifice, and because there was such a significant deposit of fat in that kind of different area of the animal, that gets special treatment in the chapter. Verse 9 describes these fat tails that would be cut off close to the backbone. It could be like 15 pounds of fat there. And it's, the tail is connected to the backbone, so you have to lop off the tail at some point on the backbone. But that's really the only difference that I see, the only significant difference that I see in the processing of these animals. So I'm going to treat them all together. I'm noticing that one difference. Okay, cow, sheep, or goat. It could also be male or female. Verse 1, whether male or female, he shall offer it perfect before the face of Yahweh. Verse 6 says the same thing, male or female. Now, perhaps it was, like I mentioned before, we're left to some extent to guess why this is. Maybe this is just keeping a balance in the genders in the herd. I don't know. But I think the concept of the sacrifice being a representation of the offerer himself or herself is more operative in the peace offering. God invites both men and women into fellowship with him. Both male and female animals could be sacrificed in the peace offering. The sin offering pointed more towards the one man, Christ, who would die for our sins. Regardless of the gender or the kind of animal sacrifice, they all had to be tamim, perfect, mature, whole, complete, without defect. This is an adjective that's describing the animal, not describing the person who's making the offering. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to offer it perfectly. It's the animal that has to be perfect. And that teaches us a deep spiritual truth, that it's not our goodness that wins peace with God. It is the perfection of another party. In this case, Jesus, our perfect sacrifice. Verse 1 mentions and 2 mentions the offering it before the face of the Lord, then laying his hand upon the head of the offering, slaughtering it at the entrance of the tent of meeting. Verses 8 and verses 13, instead of the entrance of the tent of meeting, it's before the face of the tent of meeting, in front of the tent of meeting. Process is the same as in the burnt offering in this regard. The worshiper, remember, he comes in from this side of the temple. He walks in. There's a trash area, and then the altar here. The altar's about as high as this lectern is, but maybe 4 times bigger. And then the tent of meeting is out there, and its door opens this way. And so the offerer, as they come in with the animal and slaughter the animal there, it's all in front of the tent of meeting. And in a sense, God is watching. God sees you coming, sees what you're offering, and accepts you as you move closer and closer to his presence, and your offering comes up onto the altar and gets burned up. Yeah, that got off script. laying his hand on the head of the animal. Talked about that a little bit with the sin offering. The concept of taking my sins and laying them upon a substitute who is killed instead of me. And as the hand is laid on there, confessing those sins. In this case, that's already happened in the first offering. This is the third offering of the day, as it were. So now when he lays his hand on the animal, what he's probably doing is saying, why I brought this peace offering. God, I have not had a child, and I want one desperately. God, I have sinned in this particular way. God, I promise that if you gave me this business success, I would offer you a bull, or whatever it is. This is what's being talked about, shared as the you lay your hand on the animal. The offering which brings peace and salvation necessitates the death of the person or of a substitute for the person. The way to peace and salvation for mankind would necessitate the death of Christ. Peace doesn't come free. It comes at a terrible price. And the symbol of death, or of life, and of the taking of life, was the sprinkling of blood. And so the sons of Aaron, verse 2, which is repeated in verse 8 and repeated again in verse 13, the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall sprinkle the blood around upon the altar. The priest would have taken held a bowl under the animal's neck, caught blood, then do the sprinkling. And we have that concept, the death and the shedding of blood, as the grounds upon which our sins are forgiven and peace with God is maintained. Ephesians 1:7. In Him we have redemption through His blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses according to the riches of His grace. Colossians 1:20. Making peace through the blood of His cross. Peace through the blood. Although you were formerly alienated and hostile in mind, engaged in evil deeds, yet He, Jesus, has now reconciled you in His fleshly body through death, in order to present you before Him holy and blameless. We have to have our sins taken away before we can talk to God or receive His grace. Blood has to be shed before the fellowship meal can take place. Again, the priests are the ones who bring the blood to the altar. And here is a symbolism, perhaps, of Christ bringing His blood before God to atone for us. Jesus in Isaiah 9:6 is called the Prince of Peace. The Son that will be given to us will be called the Prince of Peace. Ephesians 2:14, He Himself is our peace. Acts 10:36, the word which He commissioned to the children of Israel was proclaiming good news through Jesus Christ. And you yourselves know this. This good news told to Israel is talking about Jesus Christ. Now then, once the animal's been killed, blood's been sprinkled, the innards are offered also on top of the altar and burned up. Verse 3, verse 9, verse 14 all say the same thing. You'll offer from the sacrifice of peace offerings a fire offering to Yahweh. Here's where the peace offering differs significantly from the burnt offering. Only the internal organs are offered, the fat, intestines, and kidneys. The good meat didn't go on the altar. It was eaten. Why? Again, we're not given an explicit reason in the Bible, but I think it's reasonable to think of the internal organs as representing the internal thoughts, emotions, desires inside the heart of the worshiper. After the substitute has died for the worshiper in the burnt offering, chapter 1, made the worshiper acceptable to God, after the worshiper has offered the physical work of his hands, outwardly visible, back to God in the grain offering, chapter 2, now the worshiper has the opportunity to go one step deeper in the peace offering of chapter 3 and offer the thoughts in his heart, inside, to God, and feel God respond with the welcoming nurture of a feast. A barbecue. However, because even our thoughts, even our internal thoughts and feelings are tainted by sin that affects every part of our being, therefore death and sprinkling of blood had to precede even the offering of the worshiper's thoughts to God symbolically in this sacrifice. What specifically were those internal organs? Verse 3, verse 9, verse 14, and following in each of those three sections describe it. Fat covering the innards, all the fat that is upon the innards, or inner parts, or entrails, both of the kidneys, the fat which is on them and on the flanks, and the lobe or caul or covering above the liver. He shall put this aside and or take it away with the kidneys, set aside by the offerer, and then the priest picks it up, puts it on the burnt offering. The main thing here that's mentioned here is fat, chalav, is the Hebrew word, which is actually a different word for fat than was used in chapter 1, but I think it's probably denoting the same thing. And if you've never butchered an animal, then some of these descriptions may sound kind of, I don't know what this is talking about. I've butchered a few deer and an elk and can remember seeing some things that match these descriptions of a large net that stretches from the stomach over the bowels, completely enveloping them, and a fat that's attached to intestines. It could be peeled off. At any rate, it's the fat especially was to be offered to the Lord. And it's been suggested that maybe this is a reason why birds were not included among the peace offerings, as birds just don't carry that much fat on them. What's significant about fat? This is a significant piece of the peace offering. What is the meaning of offering fat on the altar? I want to suggest three reasons that fat was offered to God specifically here. One is that fat was considered to be the choicest part of the animal. Fatness symbolized wealth and blessing and life is good. And so by offering fat, you're offering the best to God. And you're saying God deserves the best. And that Hebrew word for fat, chalev, is actually translated with the English word best about 8% of the time in the Bible. Often when it's not talking about literal fat, but it's talking about the best part of a piece of fruit or other things that don't have fat. Jesus was the best that God had to give us. This is God's estimate of the internal preciousness of Jesus, who reconciled us to God by the blood of his cross. God gave his best to us. We give our best to God. That doesn't mean that you can't ever donate anything that's less than best. We've got hand-me-downs that are somewhat worn, but it's didn't do anybody any good sitting in our closet. Somebody could probably use it. There's nothing wrong with giving things away like that. But is there a category in your giving for offering the best? I think that's a challenging question. In addition to the fat being the best, representing giving the best to God, a second reason is that, and I think this is very much probably the... I think this is the most significant reason, is that the fat is hidden under the skin. You don't see it. And it can represent the hidden inner thoughts of our hearts that are symbolically brought forth before the Lord to share with him. New International Commentary on the Old Testament, the author, Dr. Wenham, said, "The peace offering was often tendered in intrinsically emotional situations when a man made vows or found himself seeking God's deliverance or praising him for his mercy." And so pulling out the fat and offering it to God was a way of saying, these are my feelings. I rip them out of my heart and I offer them to you, God. Matthew Henry wrote, "The burning of the fat is supposed to signify the offering up of our good affections to God in all of our prayers and praises. God must have our inwards, for we must pour out our souls and lift up our hearts in prayer." Now, were there also a third possibility? Maybe there were practical reasons I'm not going to emphasize that, but maybe there were practical dietary reasons to say, hey, don't eat all that fat. Just burn it on the altar. Parasites, there's certain parasites that lodge in adipose tissue and circulatory disorders that are exacerbated by eating a lot of fat. It doesn't mean you can't ever eat any kind of fat. Matthew Henry became one of my favorite commentaries when I saw him point out that in Nehemiah 8, there's a command to eat fatty meat. And Isaiah 25:6 also talks about this enjoying eating fatty meat. The marbled steaks that have fat that's interlaced with them, that's what makes it good. And that's not what God's not talking about, pulling out every granule of fat. He's talking about these things that are big strands and layers of fat that could be removed and put on the altar. Verse 5 and verse 11, then, it's burned on top of the burnt offering, which is upon the sticks, upon the fire. You've got a fire started, you've got logs laid on top of that. The sin offering has been placed on top of that. It's smoldering, smoke going up from that. The grain that was added to the grain offering's been heaped on top of that. It's burning. And now the innards from the peace offering animal get put on top of all that. Thus it becomes a soothing aroma as well as the ingredients for a fellowship meal. Verse 11 calls it food, lechem, bread. God's food, God's bread. In what sense could this burning of fat feed God? God's not a temporal being that requires carbohydrates to convert into energy. He's a spirit, doesn't need that. Why does he say that? I'm reminded of Jesus' words in John 4, verse 34. My food is to do the will of him who sent me, right? And to accomplish his work. It's clear that God takes a special delight that may be perhaps kin to the delight that we experience mentally and physically when we eat good food. God finds a special delight in the worship and obedience of his people. As we offer ourselves as living sacrifices, males and females, sheep and goats, maybe that's Jews and Gentiles, offered symbolically on the altar, he takes a special delight in us. This modern kind of peace offering, as opposed to the burnt offering fulfilled in Jesus, is God's continuing diet, worship, and obedience. His food. This is the context of our fellowship with him. Now, what is not mentioned in this chapter, but which is a part of the fellowship of the peace offering, was that the meat then gets cooked and eaten together on the temple grounds. Deuteronomy 12 mentions this. Deuteronomy 12, verse 6. It's there at the tabernacle that you shall take your burnt offerings and sacrifices and tithes, the heave offerings of your hand, your vowed offerings, your freewill offerings. There are some of those peace offerings, vow offering, freewill offerings. And the firstborn of your herds and flocks. And there you shall eat before the Lord your God. And you shall rejoice in all to which you've put your hand, you and your household, in which the Lord your God has blessed you. Eat before the presence of the Lord. Leviticus 7, Leviticus 7, verse 15 and following, the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering for thanksgiving shall be eaten on the same day that it's offered. He shall don't leave any until morning. However, if it is a vow or a voluntary offering, it can be eaten. It could be saved to be eaten the next day, but don't eat it the third day. Burn the rest that you don't eat by the third day. You see how this practice of a peace offering at the end of the Old Testament sacrificial ceremonies is like the end of our worship service, where we take the Lord's Supper together, and even once a month a whole meal together. Eating together symbolizes fellowship, partnership, friendship. For Old Testament Jews to eat a sacrifice with God in the temple, and for the New Testament Christian to eat the communion bread and drink the communion cup, is to make a bold statement: I have a good relationship with God. God has accepted me, and He enjoys me being in His presence. As we review the peace offering, can you see there's a lot of principles that apply to our worship today? We need peace with God. God shows His grace by providing a way of peace, the death of an innocent life. The death and resurrection of Jesus Christ fulfills God's requirement for the death of an innocent party. Jesus' blood bought forgiveness for our sin, and therefore peace with God. We must believe this. Those who believe in Jesus should express their fellowship with Him and with His people by observing the Lord's Supper together, offering ourselves as living sacrifices to Him. We should give our best to God. When we worship, we should realize that we're doing it before the face of God, in His presence. Everything we do is done coram Deo, in the presence of God. He's the only true object of our worship. In the peace offering, God required that the fat be offered to Him, leaving the good meat to His people. In our lives, sometimes God takes away something we like, just as the ancients considered the fat desirable, in order to give us something that's better. Are we willing to make that offering and to accept what God has for us? The fat offered from the animal is called God's food. Jesus said His food was to do the will of God. Will you offer that kind of food, obeying God, as your peace offering? And let us take confidence that God welcomes us into His presence to bless us, because Jesus has made us at peace with God.